city. The villa had been unchanged until we'd blundered our way into the building. I wondered, as I turned to look at the scroll, just what had happened to the original owners. They'd left in a hurry. "We're on the outskirts of the city," I reminded myself. The Eternal City had been huge. I had problems grasping the sheer size of the city, no matter how hard I concentrated. They might have had time to leave before whatever ruined the city reached here. I inspected the scroll through my spectacles, but there was nothing. The yellow haze didn't seem to be quite real, as if it wasn't magic. And yet, it was there. I held my hand over the haze, unsure if I should touch it or not. It didn't feel threatening, but I knew from grim experience that I couldn't sense a threat until it was too late. If there was a nasty spell just waiting for me, I was in trouble. And yet, bracing myself, I plunged my hand into the haze. It snapped out of existence at once, as if someone had cancelled the spell. I yanked my hand back, but nothing else happened. The scroll just lay there, waiting, waiting for me. I peered down at it, yet there was nothing. It was just a scroll. I told myself I was being silly and reached for the scroll, half expecting it to crumble the moment I touched the parchment. Instead, it was easy to open it and read the top line. "Greetings." I frowned. It was written in old script, but a very archaic form of old script. I suppose it shouldn't have surprised me. The more modern languages hadn't even existed when the Eternal City had collapsed. And yet, it still felt odd. I'd had the ancient language drummed into my head from birth, but I still had to work to translate every line. The writing was tiny, so tiny I had to squint to read. And the phrasing was archaic. Even the most hidebound of my tutors had clearly spoken an imperfect version of the tongue. Putting the thought to one side, I started to read. Chapter 31. Greetings. If you're reading this, if you gained admittance to this chamber, you're a zero. I assume, I hope, that you know what that means. You have no link to the magic field. You can no more cast a spell than I can, and I was taught my trade in the Eternal City. But you should be aware of your own talents. I've done everything in my power, working complex runes into the stone walls, to ensure that you would not be able to enter this chamber without knowing something of your talents. But too much can go wrong over the centuries for me to be entirely sure. I don't know just how much time has passed between my sealing the chamber and your arrival. Decades, at least. Centuries, perhaps. I certainly intend to ensure that no one returns to this complex for months, long enough for my work to take effect. And I don't know how much you know of the underlying truth behind magic, the truth we discovered, the truth that eventually wrecked the Empire. Knowledge of us, the Zeros, was kept hidden, even as the Empire conquered most of the known world. You may be staggeringly ignorant by my standards. You may look upon me as a child, struggling vainly to impress his elders and betters. It doesn't matter. I know you don't know why the Eternal City fell, because I am the sole survivor of the disaster. No one else in these terrible times knows the truth. There have been times when I considered taking the secret with me to the grave. Would it not be better for the truth to remain buried? But it is the way of things that secrets never remain undiscovered indefinitely. And so I have left this letter for you, my successor. If you read this, you will know the truth. May the gods have mercy on you. My name is Tyros of the Eternal City. I am the last of the Zeros. I was born in a simple farming hamlet several hundred leagues from the Eternal City. Magic was a rare thing there, largely because none of us had access to anything more than shamanic knowledge passed down from parents to children. I certainly didn't know any spells, which, coincidentally, kept me from realizing my true nature. There was no reason to expect anything other than following my father and grandfather onto the farm. I would marry young and have children, keeping the farm in our family. As it happened, the gods had a different fate in mind for me. I was 13 when we were summoned to the village school, all of us, boys and girls alike, from 8 to 18. My father grumbled, saying that we would soon put on airs and graces and forget the farm, but we had no choice. The Empire had ordered that all of us were to have at least 2 days of schooling per week. I didn't like it. What was the point of learning to read, I ask you, when there was literally nothing to read? Only a handful of second sons professed to enjoy learning, and they wouldn't have a hope of inheriting anything from their fathers. I didn't begrudge them their chance to leave the village for good. My brother and I walked down to the schoolhouse with Sinissa, a girl from the neighboring farm. She was the same age as me, her body just starting to show signs of curves that caught my attention and held it. Her blonde hair seemed to shine in the sunlight. I was, I believed, hopelessly in love with her. My father had even promised to talk to her father once we both came of age. We did our best to chat, but I was tongue-tied. I never quite knew what to say to her. The schoolmaster greeted us as we entered the schoolhouse, then pointed towards the main hall. He was a stern man, always willing to apply vigorous correction to any miscreants. But on that day he looked almost fearful. I realized why when I stepped into the hall. A grim-faced man wearing black was standing at the front of the room, watching us. His outfit, black, covered in silver runes, marked him out as a quester. He had the power to do anything in search of the truth, we knew. We stayed quiet, like mice before the cat, as the last of the school children trotted into the chamber. I don't think it had ever been quite so full. I watched, fearfully, as the quester rose to his feet and brandished a wand at us. My head seemed to go dull, just for a second. I felt tired, too tired. And then the sensation was gone, as if it had never been. I stared at him, wondering just what had happened, then glanced at my brother. He was standing beside me, his eyes dull and vacant. His hands hung helplessly at his sides. The entire room was silent, utterly silent. I was the only one who seemed to be able to move.
"You," the quester said. "Come here."
I obeyed, fearfully. Up close, he was a truly fearsome man. I wanted to run, but I knew it was futile. All I could do was wait, trembling as he cast spell after spell over me.
"You're coming with me," he said once he'd finished the tests. "Now."
I swallowed.
"Sir, my parents..."
"Will be informed,"
the quester said.
"Come."
He turned and strode out of the hall. I hesitated, glancing back at the rest of the schoolchildren. They stood there unmoving.
"Go," the schoolmaster hissed.
I took one last look at Sinissa. She was standing there as helpless as the rest. Her hair was as shiny as ever, but her eyes were blank. By all the gods, I wish I'd never lived to see that. The quester took me back to the farm and had a long chat with my parents. I learnt later that he'd paid them for me, as if I was a cow he'd bought at the market. But at the time, all I could think of was that he was taking me away. I didn't even have a chance to say goodbye. He ordered me onto his flyer and carried me off, casually. I was on my way to the Eternal City before I even knew it. Ah, the Eternal City. Do they tell tales of it in your time? Do they tell you that the streets were paved with gold, that a man could walk 100 miles without ever touching the ground? There was truth in many of the stories, too. Half the buildings hung in the air, balancing on strands of stone or floating, held up by magic. The walls glowed with a pearly white light, illuminated night and day. Even the poorest amongst the city folk dwelled in luxury, a luxury made possible by the Empire and its magicians. And, of course, the Zeros.
I hadn't quite realized it, but my life was now devoted to the Empire. Until, of course, it wasn't. The Questor and his comrades searched every year for children with high magical potential and no magic potential. We Zeros were rare, it seemed. There were only two others in my class at the Eternal City, Tristan and Helena. They would both shape my life and, ultimately, change it. Helena was a young woman, a year younger than myself. She came from a senatorial family and had been raised in the expectation of marrying someone who would cement her father's grip on power. Or she would have, if she hadn't been attacked by a werewolf 2 months ago. One half of her face was stunningly pretty, the other half was scarred, despite her father's doctors. She'd been shunned in polite society, everyone expecting that she'd turn into a wolf at the next full moon. When she hadn't, they'd known she was a Zero and sent her to us. She was a very bitter girl, understandably. Her parents had told everyone that she'd been disowned. Tristan was an angry young man, a year older than me. He would be calm and composed at one moment, then snapping and snarling the next. It was never easy to tell what would set him off. I watched him bite his forearm weakly, just to burn off some negative energy. He acted as though he'd been cheated by life, even though he was a Zero. I never knew much about his background, but from little he'd let slip, it was clear that he hadn't had a happy childhood. His older siblings had tormented him with their magic, I believe. It certainly made him bitter, too. I used to think that Helena and Tristan were well matched. As it happened, well, I'll get to that in due time. I won't bore you with the details of my training. I doubt you'd find it interesting. I had a great deal to learn, but so did Helena, so at least I wasn't alone. Tristan knew more, yet he was always willing to help both of us, it turned out. He was calmer somehow while he was explaining things. The three of us grew to maturity together, remaining friends even as we graduated. None of the older Zeros had much time for us. It was Helena, oddly enough, who started asking the obvious questions. Why were we different? What separated us Zeros from the average low magic user? Why could we make objects of power? And why, perhaps most importantly to her, did the werewolf curse have no effect on us? Tristan and I struggled to answer her questions, delving deeper and deeper into the true nature of magic. Dare I say that I miss those days even now? We sat in our workroom, drinking and chatting and theorizing, and devising experiments to confirm our theories. We had fun. And eventually we solved the mystery that had bedeviled us for years. You see, there's no such thing as a magician. I'm sure that shocks you, just as much as it shocked us. Tristan wasn't the only one to suffer at the hands of his empowered peers. I too had been hexed mercilessly as I struggled to devise objects of protection. Magic was real, right? Well, yes, it was. But it wasn't what we thought it was. What we discovered was the existence of a magic field, blanketing the entire planet. It was this field that powered magic, just as humans breathed oxygen to live. Magicians had a talent for controlling and directing the magic field, but they didn't have any inherent magic of their own. If they were deprived of contact with the magic field, we theorized, they would be unable to cast spells. Our objects of power actually worked along the same lines. Our inability to touch the magic field allowed us to create objects of power that wouldn't be warped and twisted by magic. Tristan insisted we should keep this discovery to ourselves. Helena sided with him, and I reluctantly agreed. We spent the next 6 months putting together a prototype object of power that would drain the local magic field. Tristan thought it would be useful. I didn't realize at the time just what he had in mind. Our original plans were to craft something we could use to safeguard our homes from magic, but Tristan had a far grander plan. He wanted to show his family how it felt to be helpless. He told me that he wanted to deprive his siblings of their magic, just long enough to teach them a lesson. Helena thought it would be a great joke, and I rather thought, to be honest, that the Empire needed the lesson. Our grasp of magic had turned the Eternal City from a tiny city-state on a tiny continent to the undisputed master of much of the known world. We, the Zeros, had made the city great, and yet we were treated poorly. Maybe we weren't slaves, but we were expected to work for the Empire. I had been taken from my family and brought to the Eternal City because of my nature. I had never been offered a choice. Our plan was to show off the new object of power during the summer festival, a week when the great and good of the Empire would assemble to pledge their loyalty, once again, to the Emperor. Tristan wanted to use the device in his family home, giving his family a fright before revealing what we'd done. A week before our planned date, I helped him transport the device into his former bedroom, then returned to our mansion. He insisted on remaining behind to talk to his father. That night, Helena seduced me. We spent the next week in bed together. Tristan told us to have fun, that he would handle everything. I was too busy being grateful for her caresses, that it never occurred to me to check what he was doing. I was otherwise occupied as the city filled with the great and the good, with the best and brightest of the Empire moving into homes surrounding the palace. Not that anyone moved into our mansion, of course. There was a reason we were on the outside of the city, after all. Zeros like us upset people. They found us useful, but they detested us. If I'd known what Tristan was planning when he'd left us at the mansion and headed into the city, would I have stopped him? I don't know. Helen and I cuddled on the rooftop at sunset, intending to watch the fireworks exploding above the floating city. Instead, I watched in horror as hundreds of buildings literally fell out of the air, crashing down on the city below. The ground shook violently as thousands upon thousands of spells failed. Hundreds of thousands of people died in that first catastrophic instant. More earthquakes followed as spells intended to keep the city stable abruptly failed, collapsing entire districts into the waves. Helena laughed. It was a chilling sound, and that, more than anything else, told me what Tristan had done. The Eternal City was dependent upon magic. Its absence brought the entire city tumbling down. None of the ward spells held. None of the magicians could use their powers to save their lives, let alone the city. The great and good of the Empire died before they even realized that they were doomed. I looked at Helena in horror. There was an expression of smug satisfaction on her face. I wondered grimly just how long the two of them had been plotting the city's downfall. They both had good reason to want revenge. "The Empire falls today," Helena said quietly. "A brave new world begins." She was right. Of course she was. Every nobleman, every general, every foreign aristocrat eager to claim some of the crumbs from our table, they'd all been in the Eternal City. Everyone who thought they were someone had been there when the towers fell. Most of them were dead now, and the survivors would not live long. And much of their knowledge was gone too. The great universities where magicians had studied advanced magic had collapsed, taking their students and teachers with them. Even the remainder of the Zeros, Tristan included, were dead. The flames already licking through the remains of the city would finish the job. Tristan had had his revenge. It had cost him his life, but he'd had his revenge. The Empire was broken. Helen and I exchanged harsh words as we struggled to flee the collapsing city. The object of power had drained the magic over a terrifyingly wide area, leaving me wondering if we'd somehow broken magic itself. We heard strange sounds behind us as we fled, joining thousands of helpless civilians in search of elusive safety. But there was none to be had. By the time we reached the nearest unaffected city, it was clear that the Empire was starting to collapse. It had been held in place by magical and military force, and now much of that force was gone. I didn't tell anyone what had happened afterwards. It would only have gotten us both killed by the survivors, if they believed us. I remembered enough about farming and basic blacksmithing to make a living, once we found somewhere to stay. We stayed out of the civil wars as best as we could. Helena never took well to the simple life, the restrictions placed on common-born women, and perhaps the guilt of knowing what she'd helped do. She took poison 2 years after the Eternal City fell and the wars began. In truth, she wasn't the only one. That, then, is the truth of what happened to the Eternal City. People started to forget quickly. The rubble was practically abandoned. Strange tales of weird wild magics and dark apparitions scaring away all but the most determined of fortune hunters. Now, Azero is a low-level magician, not someone without any link to the magic field. The stories I heard of the city, even a mere 5 years after the fall, made it sound like a long-lost golden age. And they are right, aren't they? The Empire wasn't wonderful, perish the thought. It was still better than the chaos that followed the collapse. The civil wars devastated the continent as surviving officers fought for supremacy. Lacking us, lacking the Empire's magical base, their wars eventually stalemated. By then, millions of people had died. I found this place, 10 years after Helena died. A young magician hired me to help outfit his home, laying gesh after gesh on me to ensure I didn't betray him. I didn't tell him that his spells were useless, not that it mattered. I had no intention of betraying him. All I really wanted was to create this chamber, then ward it. The only person who could find it, once I had completed my work, would be another Zero. I'm finishing this scroll now, then sealing the chamber. I've done things to the mansion, ensuring that a new Zero, and there will be one sooner or later, will be steered down here and shown the door. I certainly have no intention of returning. There's nothing I can do about my role in the fall, not now. Tristan fooled me with Helena's help. If I'd noticed in time, perhaps I would have stopped him. But it is now too late to change anything. I have to live with what I did, and what I failed to do. I wish I had something to impart beyond the notes I've hidden here. What use you make of them is up to you. I suggest, however, that you keep the truth a secret. Magicians will not thank you for telling them that they can be deprived of their power in a heartbeat, with the right object of power. But that, too, is up to you. Good luck. Tyros, of the Eternal City. Chapter 32. I sat back in utter shock. No magicians. No real magicians. It couldn't be right, could it? I'd grown up with magicians. I knew that Alana and Bella and my parents and everyone else had power. And yet...
There were jewels once upon a time,
Magister Niven had said. His words echoed in my mind.
12 magicians to a side. Winner takes all. And the more they cast. Sometimes the spells weaken for no reason. Sometimes the magicians would find it harder to cast newer spells. Everyone thinks there were just too many spells, and the different spell forms were interfering with each other. But is that true?
I felt cold. It wasn't true. If Tyros was to be believed, there were no true magicians, just a magic field. Perhaps the demand for magic had been so high that the field had dropped, long enough to make it hard for the duelists to cast spells. And yet, I'd thought that magicians were trained to cast stronger and stronger spells. Perhaps instead they were being taught to absorb, store, and manipulate magic from the magic field. Magister Niven's question ran through my mind.
Where does the power come from?
I looked down at the spellcaster in my hand. I knew where the power came from now. The magic field. Objects of power drew directly on the magic field, rather than channeling power through a magician. The mere contact with a human mind must taint the power, I reasoned slowly, corroding away at the devices of power even as they were forged. No wonder they didn't last long, I realized slowly. The power couldn't flow through them without being twisted and warped out of all recognition. And Tyros had built this place. The glowing orb flickered and went out. Absolute darkness crashed down around me. I jumped, unsure what to do. The chamber had been too dim for me to grasp any of the layout, even before the light had vanished altogether. I clutched the scroll in one hand, shoving it into my bag even as I tried to decide what to do. My friends were frozen, trapped in time, while I was trapped in utter darkness. I couldn't cast a light, not without tools or equipment I didn't have. And for all I knew, there was a chasm right next to me. "Cat?" Aiken said. "Cat, I'm here," I said quickly. The magic, the strange magic Tyros had devised, had flickered and died. "Rose? What happened?" Rose asked. A faint light appeared as she cast a light spell. "Cat?" "Long story," I said shortly. Neither of them seemed to have realized that they'd been frozen in time. I wasn't sure I wanted to tell them either. No one had even suspected the existence of a magic field, unless Magister Niven had an inkling. If I told them the truth and it got back to our parents, it would, of course. The story would be too good not to be shared. "Can you both cast light spells?" I heard Aiken muttering a spell, just loudly enough to be heard. A pearly white light appeared, shimmering unsteadily through the air. Aiken was standing next to Rose, his pale skin so white he appeared to have seen a ghost. Rose didn't look much better. I wondered sourly just what I should tell them. A lie might rebound on me if, when, they discovered the truth. "I think we stumbled into a trap," I said as I looked around. The shadows had vanished, revealing a small workroom. I searched it quickly, picking up a handful of the older tools and components for later. Tyros had been a master forger, whatever else he'd been. He'd been thousands of miles ahead of me when he died. "But we survived." I felt a flicker of bitter envy. Tyros had been powerless, but he'd known what he was. He'd been useful, and yet he'd also been exploited. Both Great Aunt Stregaria and Feruza had sought to exploit me. I wondered, as I worked my way through the drawers, if Dad would try to exploit me in the future. We'd been raised to believe that we had to put the family interests ahead of our own. I just hadn't been very useful until now. Dad might expect me to work for him when I grew up. But I would have done that, wouldn't I? The thought mocked me. I wanted to be useful. "Here," Rose called. "I found a tunnel." I followed her gaze, a dark tunnel leading into the darkness. I had no way of knowing where it led, but there was no other way out. We must have fallen through a hole in the ceiling. I was sure we'd fallen through a hole, but there was no trace of it. The roof looked smooth, utterly unbroken. I took one last look at the desks and cabinets, then shook my head in amused disbelief. The workroom really wasn't that different than any of the workrooms I'd used back home. The room shook. I heard something crashing to the ground. Rose yelped. "The building's collapsing," Aiken snapped. Another crash drowned out his words. "We have to get out of here. Get down the tunnel," I ordered. It was the only way out. Tyros wouldn't have wanted to kill anyone who found his lair, but I had a nasty feeling that the lair's defenses had been the only thing keeping the building intact. Tyros had done something remarkable, I thought. And yet, I'd touched the scroll in my pocket. He'd also done something very dangerous. And he'd been an unwitting accessory to a crime of monstrous proportions. I tried to grasp the true scale of what he'd done as we stumbled into the tunnel and made our way into the darkness. The population of Shalott was somewhere around 80,000, although that didn't include the people who lived outside the city's walls. If the Eternal City had been 5 times larger than Shalit, it must have had a population of 400,000, perhaps more. It had been the center of a world-spanning empire after all. The population might easily be in the millions. And Tyros and his friends had torn it all down. It was unimaginable. I just couldn't make myself grasp it. I didn't know every last person in Shalit. They were just faceless numbers to me. 400,000 was even worse. I didn't know a single person from the Eternal City. I knew, intellectually, that they'd all had lives of their own, that they'd loved and hated and lived, but I couldn't imagine it. Tyros had been party to mass murder on an unimaginable scale, and I just couldn't understand what he'd done. And Tristan was worse, I thought. He knew what was going to happen. I was sure of it. He couldn't have been otherwise, not knowing what he did. Draining the magic field would wipe out every spell in the region. The magicians would have some stored power, if I was correct, but nowhere near enough to save the city. Falling buildings and shattering containment spells would have done the rest. And if so many of the great and the good had been in the Eternal City when it died, no wonder the Empire had died with them. It had been decapitated. And yet there was a part of me that understood. Tristan had been like me, powerless but born to a powerful family. He would have been mocked and tormented for his lack of power, just as my sisters had tormented me. His family would have known what he was, of course, and sent him to the Zeros. But that wouldn't make things better. Alana had still been able to get the better of me, after I'd mastered my talents. Tristan would have had the same problem. I wouldn't have committed mass murder, I told myself. I wouldn't. But what would I have done, my thoughts asked, if I'd had the ability to strip Alana and Bella of their power? Would I have used it? I could use it. I thought I understood how the device must have worked, although forging it would take time. And if I built it, what then? What if someone else built it? Feruza had wanted me to brew a potion that would burn through any wards known to exist. How much worse would it be if she had something that wiped out magic, all magic? She could destroy the great families in an afternoon. Aiken glanced at me as the ground shook again. You're being very quiet. I was just thinking about the building, I lied. It might have come down on their heads. Good, Aiken said bluntly. That will stop them chasing us. I swallowed but said nothing as the tunnel began to level out. Aiken's light revealed a handful of concealment runes carved into the wall, hiding it from casual inspection. I wondered just what had happened to Tyros after he'd finished the scroll. Perhaps he'd gone in search of his long-lost family, or perhaps he'd just walked into the Eternal City and waited to die. To me, it was the past. To him, it was all too real. I should destroy the scroll, I thought. I didn't think Tyros had done anything to keep a magician from reading it. What would happen if I did? Another faint tremor ran through the ground. No one knew anything about magic fields, not in Shalit. Everyone assumed that magicians had magic and that was all there was to it. They'd be shocked if I told them the truth, then horrified. Someone might just find a way to lower the magic field in a particular area, just to weaken wards before they were smashed, or... My blood ran cold. What if the magic never came back? I clenched my fists as the full horror struck me. The duelist experience suggested that the magic field flowed back into place, but what if it had limits? What if, one day, the magic field ran out and the magic just went away? No magicians, no healers, no forgers, no magic. And what about the creatures that depended on magic? Dragons, unicorns, basilisks, centaurs, werewolves, mermaids. Could they even live without magic? Would they die without the magic? Or would they slowly fade away? You don't know what will happen, I told myself firmly. You don't know if any of this will happen. And yet, I swallowed hard. Magic hadn't gone away with the Empire. Of course not. Too much magical knowledge had been spread around for that. But magical activity had fallen sharply in the decades following the Empire's collapse. Perhaps the magic field had weakened too, only no one had noticed. And we'd had to rebuild the principles of magic pretty much from scratch. We might have adapted to the new reality without ever being aware of it. I couldn't tell anyone. I couldn't even tell my dad. I couldn't. It felt like we'd been walking for hours before the tunnel started to slope upwards. I tensed, trying to push my thoughts to the back of my mind, but it didn't work. Where were we? Where had Tyrus considered a safe place to hide and exit? Were we outside the city? Maybe not. Tyrus clearly hadn't known the curse on the Eternal City would spread further, not by where he'd built the villa. I wondered just what the man who'd hired him had been thinking when he'd issued his orders. Perhaps he'd thought the tainted magic would fade away, allowing him to stake a claim to the remains of the city. Or perhaps Tyros had deliberately misled him. I would never know. "There's a door up ahead," Aiken said. "I'll go first." "I've got the bracelet," I said. "Let me go first." I slipped past Aiken and pushed the door. It felt like cold stone to my palms, but it opened smoothly. I caught a glimpse of a pair of carved concealment runes as I inched forward, spellcaster at the ready. Tyros had been a very skilled forger. I wondered absently just what his training had been like as I looked around. We'd come out in a basement, it seemed. The air smelled musty, but there were no hints of wild magic. I crept to the stairwell and listened carefully. There didn't seem to be anyone above us. "Be careful," Aiken whispered. "Of course," I said. I climbed up the stairs carefully, pausing to listen after every step. Dust glimmered in the air as I reached the top, forcing me to cover my mouth. I didn't want to sneeze, but there was no one outside, just darkened corridors. I could see a window in the distance. The sun was slowly falling behind the distant hills. "Nighttime," I said quietly. I yawned as we searched the building from top to bottom. It was deserted, save for a colony of mice that squeaked loudly and fled our approach. I took heart from that, even though I disliked the idea of sleeping so close to vermin. We might well be quite some distance from the Eternal City. Tyros certainly wouldn't have wanted his tunnel to come out too close to the warped magical field. "We should go further," Aiken said. I shook my head and yawned again. My entire body was starting to ache, reminding me that I'd been awake for over 2 days. Or at least I thought I had. If it had been night when I'd escaped our captors, I'd been awake for at least 40 hours. I'd kept going somehow, but I couldn't go on for much longer. "I'm tired too," Rose said practically. "We don't want to push ourselves too far." Aiken didn't argue. I think he was tired as well, just too proud to admit it. He and Rose had burned up a great deal of energy over the last few hours, casting spells. And if their own magic had powered the freeze spell, they'd have been drained of that too. Except it wasn't their magic, was it? They drew on the magic field. "And I have no link to the field," I reminded myself. I smiled tiredly as we made our way back down to the basement. The implications were staggering, assuming I managed to get home. Now I understood, I thought, some of the more complex objects of power I'd seen in the books. And I understood precisely how a flying machine worked. I could build one now, given time and materials. "I'll cast a concealment ward on the stairs," Aiken said, once we reached the bottom. "Rose, can you block the tunnel entrance?"
"Yeah,"
Rose said. She sounded labored. I wondered if she was having problems mustering the magic. Whatever Tyros and his comrades had done, it had permanently warped the magic field near the Eternal City.
"Should one of us stay on watch?"
"No point," I said. I appreciated the thought, but it didn't matter. None of us were in any state to fight. Let's just get some sleep before morning. I felt a flicker of amusement as I picked a spot on the floor and lay down. Mum would have a fit if she discovered that I'd shared a room with a boy. She'd never let Alana and Bella have sleepovers where there was an adolescent boy in the house. I'd never understood it, not really. The parents could provide whatever chaperonage was required. And yet, it was the principle of the thing, I supposed. Young girls were not meant to compromise their reputations before they were old enough to make such decisions for themselves. Not that it matters, I told myself. We don't want to split up now. The floor was cold and hard. I wished for a mattress, a blanket, even a long coat. But I'd just have to endure the discomfort. Rose lay down next to me, looking disgustingly at ease in the semi-darkness. I supposed, unpleasantly, that she was used to sleeping in uncomfortable places. The light snapped out of existence a second later as Aiken cancelled the spell. We couldn't risk being found until we were rested. I reached for the spellcaster and placed it within easy reach, just in case. Aiken's wards wouldn't keep out a determined magician, but the noise should wake us. I wasn't going to let them take me again, not while I had the scroll on my person. I knew I should destroy it, but it was history. I didn't dare show it to anyone yet. I didn't dare destroy it either. Tyrus should not be forgotten. And yet I'm the only one who remembers him, I reminded myself. Did anyone read his name in the history books? I doubted it. I'd learnt dozens of names from the history books, the men who'd made the Eternal City great, but they'd mostly been emperors or generals. Only a handful of them had been women, and only one of them had been a ruler in her own right. The others had shocked what passed for high society in those days. It puzzled me. Women had magic too, magic enough to rule the great houses. But I suspected I'd never figure out the truth. Perhaps the women had secretly ruled the empire from behind the scenes. One woman was supposed to have done just that when her husband proved incapable. "Good night," Aiken said. His voice echoed in the darkness. "I'll wake you in the morning." "Good night," Rose echoed. I could hear her smile. "Try not to get up too quickly. It will hurt." I closed my eyes and tried to sleep. Sleep didn't come easy. And when it did, I dreamed of the magic going away. Chapter 33. "Cat!" I jerked awake, my head spinning. For a long moment I wasn't sure what was real and what wasn't. The nightmares had dragged me into a maelstrom of shadows, where everything I'd known had been wrong and nothing I'd done had been able to make things right. I felt sweat dripping down my forehead, even though it was cold. My head felt as if it had overheated. It throbbed dully as I fought to steady myself. "You were having a nightmare," a voice said. I almost hit out before realizing that it was Rose. "What were you dreaming about?" I gasped and opened my eyes as I fought for breath. Rose was kneeling next to me, her face illuminated by a glowing light. Aiken was sitting on the other side of the room, watching me nervously. I felt a hot flash of shame mingled with embarrassment. I'd never had such vivid nightmares in Raven Dorm, and if I had, the noise-dampening charms would have kept me from waking the others. "Night terrors," I managed. I didn't want to tell her the truth. The scroll felt heavy against my skin. I think everything just caught up with me at once. "You've done very well," Aiken said gently. I caught a glimpse of his worried face as he rose and headed for the stairs. "It's nearly morning, I think." My stomach rumbled, reminding me that I hadn't eaten properly in 2 days. I sat upright, gritting my teeth. We didn't have much food left, yet if we didn't eat, we'd collapse before we made it to safety. We didn't even know where safety was. I couldn't go back to the suite, no matter what promises Firouza made. The scroll would be far too revealing if it fell into her hands. I knew I would destroy it, but I couldn't. I couldn't even consider the possibility. Aiken slipped back down the stairs. "It's dawn," he said. "There's no one outside, as far as I can tell." I nodded. If we were lucky, some of the hunters had been caught when the villa collapsed into rubble. If we were really lucky, Firouza and her comrades would assume we'd been crushed under falling debris and killed. But I knew I didn't dare count on it. Firouza had every reason to go digging through the wreckage to recover our bodies, just to make sure we actually were dead. I looked at the tunnel entrance and shivered. Tyros had done a fantastic job, for someone who'd had to work in secret and alone. But I had no illusions about what would happen if Firouza started digging through the rubble. She'd uncover the tunnels sooner rather than later. "And our missing bodies will tell her that we made it out," I added silently. "We need more food," Aiken said, as he opened the bag and passed out the sandwiches. I took one and munched it, savoring every bite. "Perhaps we should go back to their base." Rose blinked.
"Are you mad?"
"They have to be searching the ruins for us," Aiken pointed out. "We sneak in, steal what we need, then sneak out again." It was insane, but I found myself considering it anyway. Firouza would be searching for us, wouldn't she? Of course she would. And she'd need dozens, perhaps hundreds of people to search a place where tracking spells were unreliable. She'd have to deploy everyone under her command to search for us, leaving only a handful of people at the base. We'd have the spellcasters and the element of surprise. It was tempting. "We can't count on any of this," I reminded myself sharply. I wanted to believe it. That was the danger. If she thinks the base is the only source of food, she may have it guarded anyway. "Or we get caught," I countered grimly. "What if she's anticipated us sneaking back to the base?" Another thought struck me and I frowned. "Where is the base anyway?" Aiken and Rose exchanged glances.
"Don't you know?"
I shook my head. "It was dark and I was trying to get away," I said. In hindsight, it was clear I'd come far too close to running right into the most dangerous part of the city. I don't know precisely where I was when I stopped.
"Oh," Aiken said.
Rose cleared her throat. "There is another possibility," she said. But we'd have to be careful." I frowned. I'd racked my brains, yet the only idea I'd had that seemed remotely plausible was walking north, following the ocean until we crossed the border. The maps made it look easy, but I knew it would take weeks, and we simply didn't have the food to keep going. "What other possibility?"
"There's a farm nearby," Rose said. "We can find it and buy food."
"A farm?" Aiken looked disbelieving. His voice was challenging. "How do you know there's a farm nearby?" Rose smirked.
"The food they fed us came from a farm," she said mischievously. "I told you it came from a farm. And if there is one farm fairly nearby, there will be others. We find one and trade for food."
I had to giggle. "Good point," I said. "And hopefully one Firouza would miss." Neither I nor Aiken had realized where the food had come from. "But what do we have to trade?"
"It depends," Rose said.
She nodded to the bag.
"That gold chain might be worth something, perhaps, but..."
She paused, just for a second.
"You may have to swear to keep their location a secret."
Aiken raised his eyebrows.
"Why?"
Rose looked reluctant to answer, just for a second.
"Because if they're here, they're probably trying to keep out of sight," she said. "The last thing they want is someone trying to tax them."
I blinked. "I don't understand."
"Farmers are taxed in kind, rather than money."
Rose sounded calm, but there was an angry undertone that worried me.
My father has to give a certain amount of crop and livestock to the local nobility every year. One bad harvest will ruin us. It isn't uncommon for farmers to hide their crops or simply flee the land. They just can't keep up with the demands.
And if they came here, they could live their lives in peace, Aiken said.
He jabbed a finger at the walls.
They're dangerously close to the Eternal City.
They may think the city is less dangerous than the taxmen, Rose countered. And they might be right.
I nodded slowly. It had never occurred to me that anyone would willingly live within 100 miles of the Eternal City. The entire region was dangerous.
And yet if the danger was limited to the city and suburbs itself, perhaps an entire community could live in the shadow of the ruins, safe from interference.
But Firouza had clearly known about them.
I wondered. It had to be said. Can we count on them not to betray us? No, Rose said flatly. But do you have a better idea?
I looked at Aiken. He looked back and shrugged. No, I said. Shall we go? My body ached as I sat up, reminding me that I'd slept on hard stone. My skin didn't show bruises easily, but the aches and pains wouldn't go away. I staggered forward, walking around until my legs started to work properly. I was easily aware that I was in no state for running, if Firouza and her friends caught up with us. Aiken was moving gingerly, in a manner that suggested he was aching too. Rose was the only one of us who didn't seem to be suffering any ill effects. She's probably used to sleeping on hard surfaces, I thought ungraciously. Mum had insisted that my sisters and I learn to make our own beds before we went to school, but she hadn't made us sleep on the floor. And if Rose wasn't here, we'd have to find the enemy base and sneak inside. I pushed the thought out of my mind as I followed Aiken up the stairs and down the corridor, spellcaster at the ready. The faint mist hung in the early morning air, but it felt reassuringly normal, more like the sea mists that drifted over Shalit than something created by wild magic. Sounds echoed through the trees, and I lifted the spellcaster, a second before realizing that they were birds. Oddly, I found that reassuring. There had been no animals nearer the city itself.
We might be able to catch a rabbit, Rose said. I can cook one if necessary.
I shuddered. I'd watched Dad slaughtering a cow for Solar Day, and it had been utterly gruesome. It had taken all of my willpower to eat the beef, after it had been ritually prepared and cooked. I didn't want to think about catching a sweet little rabbit and eating it, and yet I knew I had eaten rabbit. I just hadn't made the connection, not emotionally, between the animal and the meat. My stomach growled. If we didn't find a farm soon, we might have no choice. We stepped out of the building, watching for anything that wasn't a bird. A cool breeze blew down the street, sending shivers down my spine. I could feel the sun on my back, even though it was lost in the haze. I looked up and down, silently inspecting the rows of buildings. They looked surprisingly intact, given their age, but they were deserted. Someone must have built these to house newcomers, Aiken said. And then they were abandoned after the Empire fell. I nodded in agreement. The buildings were sturdy, but they were also identical, as if someone had stamped them out one by one. I'd seen similar buildings in South Shalit, where immigrants to the city rented housing while trying to earn the right to remain. Dad had told me that they either moved upwards within a couple of years, or went back home. Either way, no one was investing money in their first homes. And the builders didn't use magic to put them together, I thought. There was a diagram, a crude drawing of a bull, on the nearest house. They survived the fall because magic wasn't holding them together.
So, Aiken said. Which way?
I looked down the road. The mist was stronger there, but I could still feel the wrongness of the Eternal City.
That way, I said, pointing in the other direction. Let's go.
My legs kept aching as we made our way through the buildings,
Aiken swore blind we were heading north, but I wasn't so sure. I told myself it didn't matter anyway. As long as we kept the Eternal City behind us, we were heading away from the danger zone. And yet, the suburbs seemed endless. It felt as if we'd been walking for hours by the time we finally crossed a ruined road and entered the countryside. I wanted to sit down and rest, but I kept thinking that if I did stop, I'd never be able to move again. If I make it back home, I promised myself silently, I'm going to exercise every day.
Strange road, Aiken commented. What do you think they were driving on it?
I shrugged. The road had been astonishingly wide. The King's roads were in better condition. I'd driven on them when we'd gone to the country estates for summer holidays. But they were thinner, designed for horses and carts rather than anything else. I wondered if I could put together a self-propelled cart using the objects of power I'd seen in the ancient books. It wouldn't be too hard, as long as I was careful. If I built the core object of power, Aiken or another forger should be able to build the rest. The thought kept me going as we steadily forced our way through the undergrowth. There were no paths, as far as I could see, although Rose was very good at picking ways through the foliage. Insects buzzed around us, flying through my hair and landing on my skin. I slapped at them when they started to bite, but there were always more. Aiken didn't know any insect-repelling spells. Rose didn't seem bothered by their attention. It grew warmer, steadily. The mist had faded out of existence, allowing the sun to beat down on us unrelentingly. We did our best to stay in the shade as much as possible, hiding under the trees. Aiken started to redden, despite a handful of protective spells. I silently thanked my parents for the color of my skin as we walked onwards. At least I wasn't going to burn in a hurry. Aiken coughed. How far are we from your farm?
I have no idea.
Rose sounded pained. I couldn't even locate it on a map. I winced in sympathy. It was hard to remember at times just how uneducated Rose truly was. And yet she had survival skills Aiken and I lacked. I wouldn't even know where to begin if I had to catch and slaughter a rabbit. I promised myself that I'd learn that too, even if I had to beg Rose or Sir Griffin's for lessons. Feruza and Rolf might not be the last people to try to kidnap me. Dad won't let me go back to school, I told myself sourly. A year ago it would have been a welcome thought. Now I knew I'd miss Jude's. After this I'll be lucky if he even lets me walk the grounds.
It could be close, Aiken pressed.
Right? We're well within the borders, Rose told him crossly. She sounded irked. It dawned on me that she felt tired too, even though she hid it better. Wherever my farm is, it's a long way from here. We reached a clearing and paused, catching our breath. A pool sat on the far side, surrounded by churned up mud. I could see footprints, animal footprints in the mud, but there were no animals in sight, save for the omnipresent insects. Rose tensed, glancing from side to side. I felt a shiver run down my spine at her obvious concern. The clearing looked tranquil, but that didn't make it safe. Something moved in the undergrowth. I raised the spellcaster an instant before a giant beast crashed into the clearing. Rose froze as if she'd been hit by a spell. I couldn't move either as the creature sniffed the air. It looked like a pig, but it was easily 3 or 4 times the size of the pigs I'd seen on the estate, with wild eyes and dark fur. A vile smell washed over me as the beast grunted loudly, its hooves pawing the ground. I could barely breathe.
Stay very still, Rose whispered.
The spellcaster suddenly felt very heavy. It was all I could do to keep it pointed at the beast as it glowered around the clearing with piggy eyes. If it came at us, I was uneasily aware of just what would happen if its massive teeth bit down on my head. I could see muscles rolling and flexing under the fur. Slowly, so slowly, I was sure the beast was taunting us. It inched towards the pool and started to sup.
I gritted my teeth in frustration as it drank its fill, then slowly, very slowly, turned and made its way into the undergrowth. Rose sagged. "A wild boar," she said, "and a big one too."